This guitar will go in tune eventually. I think it's pretty close here. So I'll let it sit for a minute. And tune this one. It might appear. If things seem a little scatterbrained up here. It's because I didn't know that I was supposed to play anywhere tonight. Guitars are spent the day in an air-conditioned room. At a TV studio. So about the time I'm done tonight, they'll be in tune and... I'd like to play a sort of a medley that... it begins with a song that I first heard in Wyoming. I was about 14. I'd slammed my finger in. Well, I'd closed my finger in the car door, and I was standing there trying to figure out what to do about it, and. The answer is obvious, but I didn't know that at the time. You open the door and take your finger away. And while I was standing there, I was there for the purpose of shagging golf balls, and the guy who was golfing left the radio on, and this tune came over the radio. And I didn't really forget the agony that I was in, but I noticed the tune, and... remembered it. I said, to myself that I'd pursue it. So it starts with that thing and an approximation of it. It goes from there to another, actually another medley, but a much shorter one that contains frequencies of 10 cycles per second or less, as long as I'm talking about regurgitation, or as long as I've broached the topic, that will make you throw up. So, you know, be careful. That's my job. I should be careful. And I am. So now that I've talked myself into a corner, I'll play this. It ends finally with a tune that I wrote. Which imitates the flight of the June bug. In other words, it leaves me free to make any errors I want to in it. This is written by either the stool's awful flat or my ass is getting pointed. This is written by Tom T. Hall. Shut my mouth. That one note, you'll never get away from it. I'm the guy who didn't marry pretty Pamela Brown. Educated, well-intentioned, good girl in our town. I wonder where I'd be today if she had loved me too. Probably be driving kids to school. Guess I owe it all to Pamela Brown. All of my good times, all my roaming around. One of these days I might be in your town. And I guess I owe it all to Pamela Brown. Seen the lights of cities and I've been inside their doors. Sailed to foreign countries and walked upon their shores. I guess the guy she married was the best part of my luck. She dug him 'cause he drove a pickup truck. Guess I owe it all to Pamela Brown. All of my good times, all my roaming around. One of these days I might be in your town. And I guess I owe it all to Pamela Brown. I owe it all to Pamela Brown. All of my good times, all my roaming around. One of these days I might be in your town, and I guess I owe it all to Pamela Brown. I don't have to tell you just how beautiful she was. Everything it takes to get a guy like me in love. Lord, I hope she's happy, 'cause she sure deserves to be, especially for what she did for me. Guess I owe it all to Pamela Brown. All of my good times, all my roaming around. One of these days I might be in your town, and I guess I owe it all to Pamela Brown. Guess I owe it all to Pamela Brown. Every now and then, you run into a 10 or a 12, you meet a 10 or a 12-year-old kid that you'd more or less like to punch the shit out of. And, happens rarely, I admit, but now and then. And this tune begins with a lullaby that I wrote for just such a fellow. Despicable fellow. It had absolutely no effect on the guy. So there's nothing left to do but record it. Begins in with a lullaby and it ends with a spasm. Oh. Sorry about that, but I'm sure you'd rather hear it in tune. Thank you. Thank you. I'm going to finish with a medley of my greatest hits. I don't know why people laugh when I say that. It's it begins with a slow waltz that I wrote for supposedly one of the rivers that's left in Minnesota. Unfortunately for me, well, unfortunately for the river, actually, every time we were on it for 2 days and passed by three troops of Girl Scouts. There's a barbecue pit every mile and a quarter. It goes from there to a cantata or a chorale, a cantata that Bach stole from an organ player named Butch DeHuda, an Austrian organ player. who's been sadly ignored. I remember hearing as a child long stories about Abraham Lincoln walking 7 miles to return 3 cents on an overdue library book. I never heard anything interesting like Bach walking 32 miles every weekend in those Austrian winters to steal everything he knew from Buxtehude. And then it goes from there to mellifluously and undetectably, by the way, to something that I stole from a number of different places. And this has been a distinct pleasure for me. I didn't expect to see any people here. It's very nice. Thank you. Thank you. I've used up everything that I... Oh. Forgot. Yeah, if I should mention to the radio people that I broke a string. So, I know I'm supposed to come out here and play something bombastic and terrific, but I haven't got anything left to play. Let's see. Excuse me? Oh, yeah. I'll tell you what my problem is. See, this is this. I wish I could do that. This is the guitar that I use for slide, and I've got it set up a little here. So that sort of... I already played that one. I thought it was better than that. I don't know. I guess I blew it. Let's see. Well, I'll play something that's very slow. Really, if I could do any of those, I wish somebody would yell out the one I'm about to play. let me try and see if I can get this to function. No idea how this is going to sound. Let me play this and then one more that's slow. I'm going to play the other one. This has an obscene, not an obscene, I don't, that's wrong. It has sort of an egocentric outlook. This is supposed to express the frustration you felt when you were just reaching puberty and had your first wet dream, woke up in the middle of it, and tried to go back to sleep and pick up where he left off. it's called A Sailor's Grave on the Prairie, which is kind of an obvious metaphor for being in the wrong place at the right time. Thank you. Thank you. That's called Short Wave. It's a tune that I wrote after spending a couple of years trying to hear something called dry guitar, which was sort of guitar practiced in West Africa. So I was listening for it, and the problem was that nobody ever said, "Here is some dry guitar," so that what I heard, well, whatever I heard, it didn't sound like what I just played, and what I just played was what I was expecting to hear. So I'm very curious to see how close I got, but I don't think I'm ever going to find out. This is a song
called the ice fields, which I wrote after hearing about a phenomenon that other people call it ice. I call it a phenomenon that happens in near where I live in Lake Superior. I live in Minnesota, which borders Superior. I was going to teach English at one time before I became a guitar player. It's true. But I heard about something that happens there, which is called an ice field, which is, as you might suspect, a frozen lake, a sheet of ice that extends into a sort of gray, perpetual, featureless, bleak horizon where it merges with a perpetual, featureless gray sky. And it happens evidently like that because ore boats or acorn boats, they keep calling them ore boats, I really suspect that myself, get stuck there, expecting to continue out the St. Lawrence and out into the Big Drink, wherever they're going. And it's so, unbeknownst to them, they get to spend, or unexpected by them, they get to spend 2 to 3 months, 12 people or however many they have on an ore boat, in this sort of non-environment, staring at each other until, I'm sure, they begin staring at each other's throats instead of anything else. And This appealed to my sense of romance, and I burst into song and wrote this opus here.
From the Jack Singer Hall in Calgary, you're listening to Leo Kottke in Concert. I'm Ralph Van Merge, and this is The Entertainers. You may have noticed Leo Kottke's mention of Michael Hedges in today's concert. Well, that's because, as you folks in Calgary already know, Michael Hedges was on the concert bill as well. Fear not, Hedges fans, because in 2 weeks' time, we'll feature Michael Hedges right here for you, just for you. No one else is allowed to actually listen to that show. As well, you'll hear the finale with Kottke and Hedges playing some great guitar duets. Right now, though, we're going to hear the conclusion of Leo Kottke's set. So we'll go back to the stage at the Jack Singer Auditorium in Calgary. Take it away, Leo.
This is my father's favorite song, and I mention that so I have an excuse to tell you something very briefly about him that will add sort of a glow to this piece that might not otherwise have. My dad, he's one of those people who has been condemned to a life doing something that he's not particularly suited for. In other words, his real passion and his real talent is not something that he can make money on. So, like, I guess a lot of people, he just sort of labors in the vineyards, you know, and gets paid for it and goes home and grumbles. And he sought, you know, employment that could, you know, maybe give him some of the thrills that he gets out of the talent that he does have, and that took him to things like selling chipped beef door to door in northern Minnesota, which had some of that vernal quietude that he was looking for, but it didn't smell right. That chipped beef, by the way, I think was a food invented during the Second World War for people who are about to die. I'm not sure if it's true or not. It's true enough, I know that. And he became he was a golf professional for a while at a couple courses. He was a referee. He was or employed as a referee and so forth. All this time he was being himself, but his jobs were something else. Eventually went to work for the government in the United States, and there he could sleep a lot more than he ever slept before, and that was his real talent, sleep. And still is. He's legendary. He's got about seven brothers, none of whom can sleep like he can, and all of whom can tell you stories about how he does sleep. My mother saw him fall asleep standing up on a city bus once. He's fallen asleep at the wheel. I used to ride around with him with the chipped beef when he was selling that stuff. And it explained the sort of vacancy in my life that I've felt ever since when I found out that he had gone off the road a couple times. And I suspect it wasn't the fear of dying, because I probably was too young to know what that was, but I wasn't too young to confuse chipped beef with a brother or a sister. So when it left, I began to feel very lonely, and I have ever since. That's if imprinting or bonding really means something, and I think it does. So if any of you have young children, keep them out of the kitchen or anything that you don't want them to feel real close to. Otherwise, when they get to be my age and they ask, who am I really, they might say, chip beef, and then what will you do? Anyhow, he retired, and after retirement, he, of course, could really indulge his passion and his talent for this. And moved to a place in Virginia, and one Sunday late, very late on a Sunday afternoon, decided to take a nap, which is an odd decision for a guy who can just fall asleep without even thinking about it. But he made a big production of it. I suppose he relished his, you know, that he could do it whenever he felt like it. And he got up, removed all of his clothes and his shoes, and crawled into bed, and woke up about an hour and a half later, convinced, without even questioning his convictions, that it was morning and he'd been in bed for 8 hours and it was time to get up. Which has happened, I think, to most of us, but by the time our feet hit the floor, we're aware of what's really going on. But maybe because my dad lingered so close always to the edge of sleep, he didn't, you know, realize that. So he got up and he kind of stumbled off to the kitchen where my mother happened to be dorking around doing whatever she was doing there at that time of the evening. And he said, what's for breakfast? And she said, how about some eggs? Because, you know, she's used to this kind of non sequitur. And he said, fine. And she made the eggs, and they sat down. And while he was eating the eggs, and they were speaking to one another, he was sort of looking past her, over her shoulder, and out the window to where it was getting darker outside. And he decided that the world was coming to an end. That's the truth. I mean, my dad doesn't have a philosophical approach to things. They're either on or they're off, and if it requires some thought, he'll go to sleep for a while, and the answer will come to him. But in this case, it's morning and it's getting darker, the world is ending. And what I like about this, what really tickles me about this, is he decided not to tell his wife. You know, he didn't want to worry her, and just let the world end and it'd be all right, I guess. What he did instead was he got up and he went out to the car and he drove around the neighborhood to see what everybody else was doing now that the world was coming to an end. And by now it was very late, you know, practically dark, and people were lining up everywhere going into church, which struck such a note of terror in his heart that he did wake up and he came home. And, you know, about a month later, he admitted to all of this. And I like to think that he discovered some of the consolations of philosophy after that, but I can't be sure. So this is for my... This tune is for my dad. They say that Louise was not half bad. It was written on the walls and window shade. And oh, she'd act the little girl, a deceiver, don't believe her. That's her trade. Sometimes a bottle of perfume flowers and maybe some lace. Men brought Louise 10-cent trinkets. Their intentions were easily traced, and everybody knew at times she cried. Oh, but women like Louise, they get by. But he thought it kind of sad when they found Louise in a room. They'd always put her down below their kind. Still some cried when she died this afternoon. Rode home on the mail train.
somewhere to the south, I heard them say. Too bad it ended so ugly. Too bad she had to go this way. And the wind is blowing cold tonight. So good night, Louise, good night.
My favorite parts of this tune. So. Goes on for a while sometimes. I'm easily amused, and when I started playing guitar, the first thing I discovered was, I think, an E chord. In this case, a G will do. And it knocked me out. That was all I needed. And it was literally months before I found, and with riches like that, I really was stopped dead in my tracks for about 6 years. I spent hours and days just listening to this thing. I was the acoustic equivalent of a headbanger, you know, the guy sticks his head in the bass drum and waits for his nose to bleed. I would try to get as close to the guitar as I could. And really, after 6 years, almost exactly, I decided it was time to learn to play something. All that did was get me this far, and I'm happy with this. I really don't know why. Other people expect something to happen after this song. Medley of some of my older tunes. I'll finish this set with this. I'd like to thank you for coming out. Michael will be up shortly. See you again sometime. Thank you.
let me play a tune here. This has been a favorite of mine for a long time. It's written by Duane Allman. It's called Little Martha.